Hi, welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
And I am Patrick Barrett.
We, once again, Judy Nathan's not here this week, so this is not Judy.
I am not Judy.
Right, but you're becoming like the official stand-in guest host, I guess, right, you know?
I'm the official not Judy.
The official not Judy, that'll work. So anyway, we had I thought a rather interesting freewheeling discussion last week about some things.
Our ratings were through the roof, I hear.
Yeah, it's really true.
Yeah. All four of you out there, thank you.
Yeah, I was contacted by Entertainment Tonight, and you know, I think we've got a gig here.
Ah.
All right.
Two guys on a blue screen.
Yeah. So, and we'll touch on some sort of civic issues here, but one of the things that we thought we might get to last week, but we actually didn't get to last week, was just a little bit of the political discussion.
Oh, can't wait.
This being a municipal election year.
There's a lot of you crazies out there this time.
Right, and it's kind of the expectation is often put on me that I'm supposed to sort of know a lot about local Cambridge politics. I guess it's probably true. I don't know it all, though.
Well, the bumper sticker on my truck says you might know a little bit about it.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so we thought we might talk a little bit about the candidates. Now, it's not the first time we've done this on the program, but I think periodically, you know, as we head in toward November, which is still a good ways off, it's probably a good idea to talk a little bit about the various candidates and, you know, what's up. And
And this election is going to be a good one. We've got one city councilor, David Marr, stepping down. Actually, another city councilor, Nadim, who's announced that he's going to move on, maybe.
Right. It was rumored that he was going to possibly seek Michael Capuano's U.S. congressional seat.
Oh, we wish him luck.
But now I think that's more than just a rumor. I think that's been spoken so openly now that I don't think we're
He's going to have nothing to do with the Cambridge election?
I doubt that.
Oh.
Seriously doubt that. Yeah. So
no managerial position that he seeks? Or?
Maybe not an official one.
Oh, okay.
We'll see how it shakes out. But as of... I think it's important to say there actually are no candidates for city council, really, until they have pulled nomination papers, which the first day of which you can do that is July 3rd, so that's a ways off.
Well, we like to do our elections early.
Yeah, more and more. I mean, once upon a time, you didn't really hear candidates sort of revving things up until well into the summer. But it's been pulling further and further back over the last few years.
Unfortunately, craziness is in there and it trickles down. So now we're talking about 2018 or even 2020 for on the national stage.
So it makes
sense that it trickles to the local
Minister. So anyway, I think it's fair to say that the national political scene has had a little bit of an incentive for candidates who might not have otherwise become candidates to decide to run. So I guess that's a good thing, because it's good for people who have choices, and if there are vacancies, it's good that there be people to fill vacancies.
I think, just despite how bizarre our election system is in Cambridge, and you are...
What do you mean, bizarre?
You are an expert on that. I think it's actually kind of nice that people from all walks of life can run for city council, and there's really no bar of entry into it.
Yeah, as we say, it's 50 valid certified signatures. And it's probably worth mentioning, though it's really not till July when it becomes relevant, that a lot of candidates don't know that, you know, when you go in collecting signatures, as soon as somebody signs for you, right, and you submit that signature to the election commission and they check it off, then that person's signature cannot be used to support another candidate.
Basically,
every registered voter can have their signature be counted toward one school committee candidate and one city council candidate, and that's it. You know, I'm pretty sure this is the reason why the rules are that you have to turn in 50 certified, you know, valid Cambridge registered voters on your papers, but they will not allow you to turn in more than 100.
Oh.
And the reason is long, long time ago.
No one wants to read 100 names.
No. It's another reason. This is my feeling why it's true. I can't go ask anybody because the laws were written, 80 years ago.
Okay.
But you know, back then you had people with extremely well organized campaigns, and they might very well go out there, get their papers on the first day they were eligible, and then run out and grab every conscious political person in the city and try and turn in 1,000 signatures, and then they couldn't be used for anybody else.
So are you suggesting that the reason why that rule exists at 100 is to allow other people to get signatures on their ballot that they would not have otherwise gotten because someone who's a bit more savvy got them all?
Well, part of the reason for why I think that's fair to say is that...
Oh, Cambridge.
It's actually everywhere. The thing is, there's this sort of universe of people who are kind of politically charged, you know? And a lot of the political people, candidates, they often are going to those same people because, you know, political people, you know, they just know each other.
In Cambridge, we've got 105,000 people. How many voters? 15,000?
No, it fluctuates. In the presidential year, it really jumps up, and then they have to purge the list as people move away or whatever. Under the motor voter law, it's not so easy to drop somebody off the voter list. You actually have to go through 2 state election cycles.
Okay.
So that could be, you know, the presidential year, state year. And then they have to send you a letter saying, hey, if we don't hear from you, we're going to drop you.
Yeah.
Also, you also have to, they do the street listing, okay. You know, the sort of census every year. And so you have to basically...
But it's like a general pool of voters who you got.
Yeah, but the thing is, you could have the voter pool could go up to close to 70,000, and then it could drop down to 56,000, you know? It could fluctuate that much.
Okay.
I think it's fair to say that we're kind of in that sort of high 50s, low 60s is probably a predictable range about registered voters. It's actually a lot more in a presidential year, but the ones who will stick around for a municipal election year. And in recent years, we've been getting voter turnout, you know, that's not horrible, but not great, so that the total...
It's hard to feel the electricity in a municipal election.
You know, I think...
Especially when they're all saying the same thing, which they tend to do.
Right. I mean, the thing is, I've done some statistical analysis to see who votes in the municipal elections, and for the most part, it tends to be people who are... The median age is high 50s, thereabouts. So there are a lot of younger people, you know, who often don't vote because, well, simply, they don't know a damn thing about what goes on in municipal government. A lot of them don't. You know, students of MIT or Harvard, they could be registered. They are eligible to vote, but they don't know who these people are.
Well, I think if you're only here sort of passing through, it becomes hard to sort of, you know, feel any kind of need to engage on any civic level.
Exactly. So this, I think it's a rational choice for people to sort of punt on municipal elections, but you know, with the sort of the all the hoo-ha over the national elections this past year, there is this Sanders phenomenon. I think it's fair to say that Colonel Sanders. No, Colonel Bernie Sanders has, and I got to tell you a funny story about Bernie Sanders. Okay, so he's pretty much sends the word out like in his messianic way.
Yeah.
To his loyal followers, that thou shalt go up, thou shalt go forward, my disciples, and seek public office and get involved right down to the local level. So a lot of people are, you know, hearing the word of the Lord and doing that, you know. And I think that's a factor in terms of some of the emerging candidates here, and I think it'll be a factor in terms of who shows up to vote.
Well, I think it turned up the heat 2 years ago. Well, at least in the last election cycle, people sort of got all huffy about, you know, developer money and bringing up some of the more populist issues that, you know, kind of spun on its head on the municipal level, where they're trying to mirror something on the national level. I don't really feel it quite exists in the same
context. Like when you check off on your income taxes, I don't, you know, do you want to contribute $1 or $3 to a presidential election? You know, this notion about having some money for a national campaign for presidential candidates, as long as they sign some document saying they agree to certain restrictions, that makes, you know, I don't know that it's so necessary in this day and age because of the way campaigns are reshaping using social media.
I know we're not going to get into the candidates just yet, but there, I mean, Craig Kelly has always run a lean and mean campaign. Last election cycle was a little different.
Yeah.
But prior to that, he's always run lean and mean, and he's always done sort of decent in his areas. I think, you know, that's a good sort of benchmark for what people actually really have to do. It's really just about walking around with all politics being local.
Yeah, I think that what's happened in recent years is that if you know you can run a Craig Kelly style campaign, run for office and spend less than $10,000 and get keep your seat. It's maybe a little tougher if you're a first time candidate to break in that way, but when you got a couple of vacancies, it's a lot easier.
It's tougher if you're a first time candidate and you only been here for less than 5 minutes and you have no idea where to go.
Right. Well, that's right. But if you're
oh, you've never been to city council for right. 1 second.
If you're at least somewhat established in the city, like you've been here more than 6 months, or maybe more than a few years, perhaps, you can break in, and I think you can actually have a successful campaign and without breaking the bank.
I've been here for over 10 years, and I don't think I've been here long enough.
You know, one phenomenon I think happens is that incumbents, I always call it, it's sort of the senior prom fear factor. Basically, if you're an incumbent, you're absolutely petrified you're not going to get asked back to the prom. So, fear of losing as an incumbent is something that drives a lot of the money that gets put in, because even if somebody knows in their heart of hearts that they're going to get reelected because they've made all the appropriate contacts, they've got a good network of a voter list that they work from, and they keep in touch with their constituents, and they're going to get reelected. But the thing is that when they see other candidates sort of going after them, they get worried, mm-hmm. and they have this terrible fear they're not going to get asked back to the prom.
I don't think any incumbent is happy to see a brand new, fresh slate of potentials join on.
No, they're not. So what they'll do is they'll raise money, and people will gladly give them money. Yeah. And so you end up with some candidates having these very large amounts of money to spend, and if you got it, it makes no sense to leave it in the bank.
I think we've seen several examples, though. Even with a very large bank account, it doesn't guarantee much anything.
No, that's really true. I think Dennis Benson last time around spent...
Ken Reeves prior to that.
Ken Reeves prior to that spent very large amounts of money and were not elected. That can happen.
Yeah, well, I think the point is somewhere in between a Craig Kelly-style campaign and... some of what the other candidates have done, raising money-wise, is probably where the half the middle is.
Right. Now, there were some proposals this past council term for various proposals, or at least discussion about possible municipal campaign financing mm-hmm. with using public money. I'm not a fan of that.
Neither am I.
I
so much for counterpoint on that issue.
Well, I mean, I pointed out at a council subcommittee meeting, maybe it was government operations, I can't remember now, saying that, it's different if you have like three candidates all competing to be mayor,
right.
and then you get a little public money put in a pot to each of them to support it a little bit. But when you've got a proportional representation election, if there's 25 candidates, and then some prominent candidate decides to run a slate, and then basically pads the slate by recruiting multiple candidates, and then they're all eligible for money.
Have you seen an example of that?
Well, it happens. So then you have this situation where, in fact...
What about where someone's managing a slate?
And well, it could happen. It could happen.
It's a hypothetical.
But let's just, for argument, say that, you become eligible for $10,000. I have no idea what you would actually get from right. public financing. But let's say it was like $10,000 for being a candidate. So you say, I want to run a slate designed to elect me.
Ooh.
So I convince, a bunch of friends or fools,
which
may be one and the same, and to basically become candidates. Yeah. They each gather up and get $10,000 under this hypothetical scenario. And then it's basically $100,000 to support your slate,
yeah.
which is really guaranteed to elect a person.
Which is exactly the kind of shenanigans we're trying to avoid.
Right, and that kind of phenomenon wouldn't happen in a typical winner-take-all election, but it could very well happen.
I think it's actually the wacky form of election style that we have here that allows, that actually makes that kind of an issue moot. You don't need to have that there because we do have proportional representation, and there is a chance for that candidate who doesn't have a lot of funds, who doesn't have a lot of outreach to get right. into the city council.
Yeah, and I think nowadays, I mean, it was a time where things like direct mail, and having a good election day machine so you can drive people to the polls and all of those things were kind of good strategic things. But, and I remember a time when candidates didn't have websites, they didn't have email lists to try and, you know, maintain contact or recruit.
I'm not even concerned how effective that those trainers are. I still think Cambridge is a short walk, and the people who I see doing the most walking tend to be the ones that get elected.
Yeah, it's often said that the people who are willing to burn up a little shoe leather knocking on doors, and knocking doors doesn't necessarily have to literally mean knocking doors.
Well, in Jay Dev's case, she has that orange bicycle.
She's got the orange bike. It's very Craig Kelly used to go around. I'm sure he still has it. It was a bike that had a mechanical thing that was like a fruit juicer or something. He would do that, and he'd show up at every event, and he would do this thing. See, it sounds a little corny, but you know, it actually works.
It does.
You know, honestly, and I, this is one of the things I say. I say it not to infuriate new candidates, but I say it because I think it's true. Is that though there are some voters who will vote for you based on your position on certain issues,
right.
Most people are going to vote for people based on the fact that they think you're an okay person.
Yeah.
You know, they like, you gave a good handshake, you seem like a regular guy, you or a regular gal, you laughed at the right jokes,
right.
you eat good food, you enjoy yourself, you got a sense of humor, and you're halfway there toward election as long as you can at least come across as a human being.
Oh, what an interesting concept.
Maybe I'm naive. Call me naive.
No, I think that's spot on.
No, when you're doing it hand to hand, you know, one on one with individual voters, there are some kind of cardboard kind of people who are just says, please recite for me how you feel about this particular issue. But that's not how most people are.
No, it's not. I think that most of the votes that are coming, they like you, they'll listen to you. And if what you're saying is even close to what they're thinking about wanting to have done, I mean, there's also the issues that they bring forward. You're talking this new age of sort of populism, and there's things that just aren't on the table that people, candidates will bring forward to say, I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing, and well, those are state issues or even larger issues,
right.
And you're not going to do that,
right.
Because you can't. You don't have the power to do that.
Right. But, you know, and I think that I think you're pointing out something that's probably going to be a bit of a factor,
mm-hmm.
at least among some voters. You know, the Cambridge City Council, for example, neither the council nor the school committee are going to be deciding the future of nuclear power in this country.
Yep, that's...
They will not be deciding anything having to do with abortion.
That is also true.
Right? They are not going to have a whole lot to do with immigration policy nationally. Yet I'll bet you a rather significant fraction of the political rhetoric this year are going to be about things that the city council has absolutely nothing
sure.
to do with.
Absolutely.
Because it maybe among some certain voters, especially voters who are not particularly connected to municipal government, it may resonate with them. Mm-hmm. So, fair game, I guess, right?
It is, and I think for the most part, voters, people who actually do vote in Cambridge, see through most of that stuff, and they vote for the people who, you know, like you said before, seem the most human, seem the most they can relate to.
Right. But, you know, things could change this year. I mean, I think a typical voter turnout in recent municipal elections is on the order of about 18,000
mm-hmm.
voters,
yeah.
right? And you might say, well, it's 18,000. What if there are 60,000 registered voters and only 18,000 voters? I mean, you might foolishly say, well, I can go out, there's 42,000 voters that I can just go for. I can certainly get quota. Right, I can get my whatever you know. If you have to ultimately get, if it was, if 18,000 voters voted and they were valid votes, you'd have to get about 1,800 votes ultimately to get elected.
Right,
right. You don't actually need that many number one votes, first preference votes, because you know, other candidates their ballots will transfer to you. So, but eventually you'll come up to that.
I think the best example of that is last election. I believe Carlone had around 900 something first number one votes.
Right.
And then he got bumped in the council after Connolly had lost and his votes transferred over into it.
That's one of the ideas behind the way we do single transferable vote areas, that if you have candidates who are drawing from a common constituency, like I think it's fair to say that Dennis Carlone and Mike Connolly were, who had been his aide, right?
Yes, exactly right.
Were drawing from a similar constituency.
Yeah, same crew.
Right? So if they could have potentially, in a winner-take-all type of setting, like top nine finishers win, right?
Right.
They could have effectively split the vote and then have them both lose, mm-hmm. so that constituency, even if it exceeded 10% of the population, would not be able to get the sufficient number of votes to get elected. But if one candidate is, once they knocked out, and their second preferences can transfer to elect the other one who appeals to a similar constituency, then this way that helps to mitigate any problems of vote spoiling.
I think that's what gets a little bit scary when you're talking about creating some kind of fund for municipal elections to help candidates run, and then you think of all the third dynamic to this candidacy of having these neighborhood groups who support specific people and specific agendas. That's Jesse Ken and Beninov dancing in the street. Right. But to finish my point, I think that you really do create a terrible situation where you could have all sorts of bad results and undermine what I think is one of the really great democratic processes that we have in place in Cambridge. Right. By allowing neighborhood groups and these slate compiles, and you've got money involved, so it's a big
deal. I'm a supporter of proportional representation style elections because it's important to say that when in 1938 this charter option, planning charter, was established, nobody proposed having proportional representation elections and anything other than a strong city manager form of government. And the reason for that is really quite simple. It's that you have one ideal, which is to have maximum representativeness in the elected body. But if you actually gave them enough authority to govern...
The new word?
Yeah, to make stuff up. You know.
Trademark.
It's English. We can do that, right? But the thing is that it's a good ideal. You know, you want to have everybody gets a seat at the table. Not everybody, right? But many people, most constituencies of any substance, we should get some seat at the table. Yeah. Minority representation, and that meant political minority, racial minority, gender, anything at all, right? Whatever people want to decide on, right? So they should have a seat at the table. But in many countries where you have proportional representative elections, if that proportionally representative body has to govern, you are in trouble.
Yeah.
Because it's fractured, it's good, it's representative, but it doesn't actually have the ability to actually
execute. Have you seen the city council operate?
Right. So the city council can be a little wacky and all over the place sometimes.
Bring popcorn.
But that's partly by design.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of like, okay, we're all going to show up at the table with our crazy uncles this Thanksgiving. We're going to come to no resolution, but, you know, we're going to have a great time doing it.
Which is why I think it's actually, when they all actually agree, you always hear like a collective sigh of relief among city staff. And
well, if they can agree on something substantial, of course they agree 9-0 on almost everything, like council resolutions, orders, they just wave them all through because nobody wants to talk about stuff, right?
Well, they were all, there was a resolution to impeach Trump or something like that, and they were all for that, which I was shocked by. I thought there was at least one outlier.
Yeah.
David Meyer, did he sit out that one?
Yeah, I think there was one person who voted no.
On a protest of ridiculousness?
Yeah, I think it was basically a protest of ridiculousness. It wasn't a disagreement with the sentiment. It's just that, Cambridge City Council has
our limits to our power.
Yeah, I have to go check the planning charter, but I don't believe there's a clause in there about, impeachment proceedings shall begin within the Cambridge City Council, right? Yeah. So
that's always something they put out there, that we wind up getting a jab from Somerville or Boston being like, no, Cambridge is at it again.
Cambridge is at it again. We get our reputation as the moon bats and whatever, right? But I'm going to stand in defense of having a proportionally representative elected body. I want that the individuals who are there will sort of step up and act as responsibly and rationally as possible. Yeah. In fact, quite honestly, my criteria in terms of who I want to see elected has almost nothing to do with their positions on issues. It says, are you a rational person who's capable of working out agreements amicably with your colleagues?
Right.
Right? The ideology will work itself out, but it's a problem if people are so intractably tied to an ideology that they can't deal with each other.
It astounds me every election cycle that you've got these candidates that run out, incumbents that are running out, trying to get your vote, and they talk about this issue or the other thing, and they almost act as if you elect them, their entire agenda is going to be run right through the council, and that there's not 8 other people there that might have an issue with it.
Right.
It's almost as if they forget that they're part of this elected body.
In truth, actually, if you look back over the years, what you'll see is a pattern where if somebody is so aggressively asserting that I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do that, that probably causes a bit of a negative reaction amongst their colleagues, because they basically come across as arrogant.
You come in the door screaming and yelling how everyone's not doing their job, then you say, let's get to work, and they're like,
I don't know about that. I don't think so. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great to see a candidate come out and say, I am ready to work with 8 other people. You know what? What I want to get done may not entirely get done, but I'm happy to work with the 8 other people that I have to work with to accomplish something.
Yeah. You know, another thing that's worth mentioning, and we'll talk some more about some, we'll look at maybe even some individual candidates in the next half hour. But, you know, there is a real problem in campaign rhetoric. And I joke about when I talk with new candidates, which I often do. A lot of them contact me. And I said, you know, here's...
You got to go to the mountain to get knowledge.
That's it, right? So here's what's going to happen is everybody's going to start off trying to sound different. But then within a few weeks, they are all going to sound the same.
I would argue within a few seconds. I look at some of the web pages. They're right. All the same. So they copied and pasted each other.
Yeah, I'm really different, right? But and I believe in affordable housing and vibrant cities and, you know, and motherhood and apple pie. And honestly, they almost invariably end up sounding the same.
Yeah.
Right? And exactly. And so therefore, you know, your position on an issue is not really so important when everybody sort of trends the same.
I was shocked to find out that all 20 candidates are for affordable housing. I mean, amazing. What a coincidence.
Yeah. It's incredible, really. But you know, but the thing is, if you ever try and nail them down, say, okay, so tell me specifically what new idea, program, initiative, policy change you're going to do to actually make a difference in that. They come up surprisingly thin.
Well, I think you look at what Cambridge has already done, especially with that particular issue. And it's you compare yourself to other municipalities, you can't fault any of the things that we've done, driven by the city managers and driven by councilors who've, you know, all have pushed on the same issues and all kind of want the same thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hard to say that. Yeah, I've got a bunch of good people sitting here, and somehow I know better than they.
Right.
Which is, for me, an election kind of turnoff.
All right. Well, anyway, we're going to have to split for 3 whole minutes, but we will be back in a few minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.